Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to a U.S. Open Week Get a Grip. We are live from Wingfoot. Is that what you say in this media world?
Very live. Live from the U.S. Open, as they say on Golf Channel.
I want to start with something that's not golf. We talk sports fans beginning, Max. I want to play a little audio from a couple episodes ago. Tim, do you mind playing the audio?
The Clippers are losers. Like, they losers lose and winners win. They're going to lose.
Losers lose, Max. You said it. You called the loss. You didn't necessarily say the Nuggets were going to win, but I mean, you are spot on. I want you to take your moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is my victory lap. I didn't know when it would happen. I didn't know who it would happen to. I didn't know why it would happen. But I did know that losers do tend to lose. Whether the Clippers beat the Lakers or not, I still wouldn't have been too worried about the Clippers winning. It was fun. You know, I have had to hear about this all year from. Once the Lakers and Clippers played on Christmas Day, I was watching Lakers lose in kind of a pretty ugly fashion. And everyone starts telling me, you know, oh, this is the Clippers year. This is the Clippers year. They're so much better than the Lakers. And I kept saying, we have LeBron James. I'm not super worried about it. But even if I'm not saying I wasn't worried at all about the team. I thought the Clippers were really, really good. But anytime you showed me something on paper that said, you know, this is why the Clippers are better than the Lakers, this is why they match up better than the Lakers, I just kept thinking to myself, okay, but losers still lose. And I just believed in that. And I know that this is going to open me up to a ton of Dodgers hate. And that's okay, because I'm taking my moment. I haven't had a lot with the Dodgers lately. I haven't had a lot with the Lakers lately. So I'm taking my moment. This feels really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, you said you were a little, you might be happier about this than if the Lakers win the championship.
Yeah,
just because you've
I've seen five also.
Like, yeah. You've also seen a few championships. You know, tell me what you think on this take. I was thinking about it as I was driving over. Are the Nuggets what Portland wishes they were? And this is no knock. You know how much I love Dame. But just the team. I mean, it just feels like Denver 1-9 is just this unbelievable team that meshes so well. I mean, you heard the Joker say it in his post-show interview. Did you like how he just hijacked the entire interview?
But I didn't see the post-show. I was celebrating.
Jamal's trying to talk and Joker just talked the entire time. But, you know, he just said, even if we lost this game, we lost the series, we got knocked out. He said, I'm going to remember this team because we're so cohesive. And I just feel like, you know, that Portland's got the stars and they've got a lot of pieces, but the Denver team just seems like they make it work better.
Yeah, they must. I mean, obviously, like, it's always so difficult to, for me to like look at these types of just like one-off playoff runs, because I mean, they have come back from 3-1 twice. They've looked like the worst team in the playoffs multiple times. I don't think the Blazers really ever look like the worst team. So it's one of those, yeah, maybe that they gel better. Maybe they just have the pieces that fit better. I mean, Joker is kind of the X factor. Obviously Jamal Murray has played amazing, but Joker does the dumb shot where you think you play great D, makes it, and it must be demoralizing. So maybe they just have that it factor that the Blazers must miss. So yeah, I guess I would agree with your point. I want to bring up this point though, that I thought about, you know, kind of all night. You know, we talk about who the best player in the NBA is a lot. You know, honestly, pretty much every week, I would say someone brings that point up, and you get a lot of, obviously, Giannis, you get a ton of Kawhi, you'll get a little bit of Anthony Davis, but you'll get all these guys, who's the best player in the NBA. And you know, it's obviously always, it's an opinion and it's up for debate. LeBron James carries teams. Kawhi Leonard, who I love, he's one of my favorites. He did not carry that team at all. Like, he went, Not only in the fourth quarter, but he went 0, him and Paul George went 0-for in the fourth quarter.
Is that right?
Yeah. Didn't score a point, 0-for-7 from three, like just did literally nothing. And I'm not saying that LeBron hasn't had his moments, but that's not my point. But LeBron carries teams to the finals. And I don't see these other people we argue about who's the best player. Oh, this, you know, this guy is way better than LeBron because look what he can do. It's like, I get that, but everyone's judged nowadays, which I think might be unfair, on wins. And so if you don't win, then what? And like, why are you then considered a better player? Yet when LeBron wins, it's always somehow manufactured into who on his team really helped him. And not saying Anthony Davis is unbelievable, but my point is LeBron's done this for his whole career, and Kawhi has a team that is
stacked. And again, he was the best player on the team. He was probably the best player on the court, but he didn't win. So I just don't, the argument to me gets so like obvious for MVP or who's the best player, at least in the West right now or whatever. Like that to me is quite obvious. It's LeBron James. It's still LeBron James. It's been LeBron James in the NBA. You know, Kyle Kuzma said it best. If LeBron doesn't win the MVP, you know, after Anthony Davis didn't win Defensive Player of the Year, we're going to have something to, you know, to complain about. And it's true to me just because you look at, you know, Giannis goes out, team looked pretty good. When LeBron's off the court, the team doesn't look the same. So it's kind of, it's one of those interesting, you know, balances of what do we value more? And this dude's been doing it forever.
Yeah. Well, one of our friends in our little NBA chat we're in screen grabbed the text message chain we had from maybe right before the playoffs where I asked everybody to rank their top three teams.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure any of us had Lakers. We all had Raptors. We all had Clippers.
Raptors, Clippers. Yeah. I had Lakers just because it's a heart bet. Right. And no one even thought of the Nuggets.
And here we go. But you know what? And again, I know people are tuning in for their Wednesday US Open podcast to hear about basketball, but the last point to your LeBron point, maybe he's the best teammate ever. I mean, not just being one of the best players ever, but when you watch his teammates on the bench, on the court,
it's fun. For
every team has just loved it. They've loved every minute of it. They love being on the team with LeBron. So yeah, you confident against the Nuggets? Are you going to be nervous if you're down, if you're up 3-1?
Oh, for sure. But again, like you couldn't be happier playing the Nuggets.
Right.
Because it also doesn't, they might not match up great, but I mean, the Clippers were going to be a much harder team to play against. I hope everyone knows, like, I think they're amazing. They were favored, I think, in Vegas. So you'd rather play the Nuggets. You take your chance. I will say this, like, I believe that if the Lakers are up 3-1, like they do have they have really good leadership. And I think that matters. I think that, you know, Kawhi's been there a lot. He doesn't seem like maybe he'd be the most outgoing leader in the locker room. I could be way off, but who knows? But I do feel like the Lakers seem to get themselves ready for each situation. And, you know, this is last year LeBron got hurt and the team was kind of a little different for the 20 something odd games and missed the playoffs. But this year, like they have grown up together. So I guess I'm not nervous for the Nuggets, just considering that I was nervous to play the Clippers. So this is just feels like a big upgrade for the Lakers.
So speaking of nervous, U.S. Open week, I don't know if you knew that or not. We are both here. I'm doing the international feed. You're playing in it.
I am.
Playing in the championship.
Domestically.
explain to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about this place.
Yeah, explain to me why Wingfoot, a golf course where you're not going to lose a golf ball all week.
That's
for the most part.
Not, okay.
But I mean, you're not going to have a whole bunch of lost balls here. It's not we'll a golf see. Course like that. Why is Wingfoot so difficult? And I want you not to say rough too many times.
Okay, but I have to, just to be fair, we've lost like 4 balls in the rough.
Okay.
Okay, so just...
Have you?
Yes.
I mean, is that going to be an issue with no fans and limited
the spotters?
Spotters?
Who said it yesterday? Jordan said it yesterday. The spotters are going to have to be on it.
Okay.
Because like yesterday we would... they had them in the fairway and they did a pretty good job, but we've had them find a different ball. And then the second shots, they weren't really up there. And did we lose one? We might have lost one in our group yesterday by the green because no one was up there.
Okay.
But it's so I don't mean to lead with the rough, but it is as advertised. Here's the deal with this place.
First time playing it, right? You never
first
played
time
it before.
Playing it, no. And you know, obviously we did our regrip of it, so I had a decent idea of the difficulty at least. But like we always say, TV doesn't do anything justice. That the craziest part Joe and I have had as far as, you know, he watched the old U.S. Open. Obviously, we did it. Was getting to 18. That hill that Jeff Ogilvie chips up and over looks on TV like it's, you know, maybe 5, 10 feet elevated, and it's got to be closer to like 30 or 25 feet, or at least, you know, whatever. Like it's super steep. So it just nothing looks like it did on TV. That putt that Jim Furyk leaves like 12 feet short from 18 feet. I mean, all these greens have these insane kind of spines in the middle at times. We got a putt and just drip it over the top. Number one's green is the craziest green I've ever been on. Yesterday we're playing, it was me, Kiz, Ricky, and Spieth, and
first off, it was north wind, cold, early in the morning. We only had one person hit the fairway. I hacked it up just short left of the green. Kiz had to lay up. Jordan hit it just pin high right, missed the green, which actually wasn't the worst spot. And Ricky hit a good shot from the rough into the front of the green. My chip thought hit it pretty good. It rolled out to like 25 feet short right. Ricky hits this putt that just doesn't go hard enough and ends up going 25 feet left of the hole. Like from he putt it. He missed it 25 feet left. Kisner hit a wedge into there to 8 feet. Jordan had this screwy chip from this weird spot and had 12 feet. So you're looking at it as four really good golfers. We end up all making bogey, by the way. Four really good golfers, and the closest we could have for par was the guy who laid it up. And so my point to that is that you do hear a lot about the rough, and it is important, and I'll explain that more, obviously, but the greens complexes are nuts. So part of this rough thing is the fairways are demanding. So it's sometimes, you know, you went to Erin Hills, right? You were there, and Erin Hills, as we've documented, needs wind because the fairways are quite large. So if you miss the fairways at Erin Hills, you're in thicker rough than this. I mean, as far as like the wispy tall stuff, these fairways are just hard to hit flat out. I've been told that a lot of, you know, someone who can draw a three wood really well for righty is in a really good position because that's a lot of it. And you know, you get here and yeah, you see a few of them, but then you also see some fade hole. I mean, I don't think that there's one type of player that will succeed out here. And the most interesting thing of all is, this course has statistically has actually been a scrambling golf course, not a ball striking golf course as far as who wins it. So I think that's an important reminder, because what it means, first off, is you need to leave the ball in the right spots at all times. That's all we've been taking notes of. Hey, you can miss it right here. And that's where you need to miss it. Because if you're in other spots, you're going to have a hard time, because hey, it's hard to chip out of this rough. And it's also hard just to get the distance right on any chip where it just drips over a hill. I think the two most important things this week is driving and chipping, or scrambling, because if you do hit fairways, you can control where you leave a golf ball. I think that's the important part, that people should understand. Hitting the fairway, if I miss the fairway, especially out of this rough, let's just say I could get it up by the green, it's much harder to control where I'm going to leave that golf ball, just because it's thick. I don't get as much spin. And also, you know, the club can get ripped over to the left or the right, you know, and the ball can kind of go anywhere. From the fairway, most of us, if we're playing decent, can control where we miss it more or less. The part that I think that doesn't get talked about enough about this place because of the rough is when you do hit the fairways, which you're not going to hit many. I think USGA or somebody said that like the average or the best fairway they expected was like 60-ish%, just because they're so hard to hit. There's no bomb and gouge this week, by the way. If I hear that word one time, I'm going to lose my mind, because you can, I don't think you can hack it out of this stuff unless they cut it. But when you do hit the fairway, the course is long. You're hitting like four, five, we hit 6 iron probably six times yesterday. Do I think that's how golf should be? For sure. It's nice to have those clubs. And now sometimes I played two and hit wedge in the first day I was here, and then the wind switched and I hit 4 iron in yesterday. So it will change.
It's four iron into two?
Yeah, it's 4 iron into two.
And what'd you hit into three? What'd you hit off the tee? They
played us half a tee or tee up and I hit 3 iron. Jeez. Yeah. So it's a different golf course. But then of course, then you get to play a hole that, you know, I had 4 iron and I had 7 iron. But the thing is you're hitting those iron shots with the long iron shots, and there's a very small area to leave it. And when we talk about leaves, it's obviously harder to control where a 4 iron is left compared to even a 6 iron or a 7 iron. So now it requires very precise iron play. And I don't think that the person that wins this week is the one who does that the best, because I'm just not sure anyone can do that enough to just beat this golf course. I think it would help, of course, but I think the person who will play the best this week is going to have a lot of control of their golf ball. And by that, I mean, they'll know where it's not going, so they can take out a part of the green. Cause that's where, if you get pin high on any of these holes for the most part and you miss the green, your chip is going to be really hard because you have to play so much break.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So you're a guy that has always talked about how much you like hard golf courses, and I feel like you've shown it in your play. Typically, when the golf courses play tough, you play well. when you get to a place like this, never played in the golf course before, knowing it's going to be so difficult, where's your level of excitement in terms of knowing it's going to be 72 hole battle, right? I mean, it's going to be every hole, take par on any hole and you'll run off the green and go to the next hole. Your excitement in terms of playing a tough golf course versus, you know, being nervous that Wingfoot's a place that if you're a little off, it's going to kick your ass.
Yeah. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting to play, I guess, any big championship. The golf course, I think the thing I'm most excited to play this tournament and this golf course in particular is I fortunately got a reset after playoffs. I noticed, you know, and talked to some people about how my attitude's the wrong word, but how I just wasn't having a lot of fun since coming back from the quarantine and really focusing on like the mental aspect of golf. And it's cool to have this one be that week, because I think that is very, very important this week. I think the person who doesn't complain, the person who just takes their medicine and tries to just look at everything as they make the best out of every single situation this week is going to, you know, have a better week than the opposite. So I think that's what I'm excited for, and that's what I've been focusing on. No one can play this unless you get a blackout week, but no one's going to play this course well enough to just drum it. The course will win this week, in my opinion. So if you can already take that into consideration, everyone's going to be a little off. It's going to make you a little off. It's going to be cold. It's going to be windy. It's going to be a hard golf course. So yeah, I'm excited for the fact that I think that I typically play good golf courses because I'll really enjoy the grind. And I think in the last 2 months, I stopped doing that and started trying to play too good of golf and not, you know, focusing on the mental. So I'm excited that I have, you know, remembered how, and I've been pretty much my only focus has been have fun, enjoy what you're doing. And yeah, just like, yeah, take what you get. If I miss a fairway, you know, if I miss the first four fairways, let's say, I play them all the correct way, I'm going to hit four fairways later on. You know, like you just have to look at it like that. And I know I'm playing really well right now, so I like where the game is at. So it's like finally go into a week and stop thinking about how I'm going to hit my driver in the fairway on every hole and think about how I'm going to react when I don't.
So attitude wise, I mean, would you say, you know, if a player is the guy on the range, the guy in the press conferences, by the way, this is your press conference. I don't know.
Yeah, this is typically how they go.
The guy in the, you know, presser, the guy on social media, the guy even off camera complaining to his friends, his girlfriend, his caddy, whoever. I mean, no chance, right? If you're already not just nervous and intimidated, but if you're already kind of worried about what the golf course is going to do to you, because you know, you guys go into events and, you know, 66, 65, 64, now, you know, 62s are out there, really no matter what the golf course is. And this week, it's like, if you shoot two over, it's a good round of golf, right? I mean, if you shoot two over, you feel like you played fine.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that does take a switch in the head that maybe some players either don't have or aren't willing to allow themselves to kind of click in, you know, where you go out there and you shoot two over and you're pissed because you're typically pissed when you shoot two over, and here that's okay.
Yeah. I think it will be a weird place to kind of get to. I think that if you were able to, do your best on each shot and really look at it like that, I know that's simple. It gets you out of your score. So let's say you know, Joe kept joking that pretty much every par four, if you had a putt for par, it was like a birdie putt. Like if you looked at it like that, and because like let's just say
like a legitimate par putt, like if you had like 12
feet. Yeah, like 12 feet, and it's, you know, and obviously we're not expecting to make bogeys on every hole, but that's how he was kind of looking at it, as like, yeah, this is when you have a birdie putt on a hard long hole, you know, it's a eagle putt. You know, you just weren't, it's not that you weren't expecting it, but you need to like be excited about that opportunity. But if you hit it in the rough, which you will plenty of times, as I said, I mean, a 50% would be an average decent week off the tee. And you don't look at it as, oh my gosh, I'm going to make a bogey. Instead, let's just say you did kind of have the mindset that it was a par five, just how your brain kind of changes, right? So you pitch it out. Let's say you have now 100 yards. If you were looking at it as score was so important, you would be like kind of reeling a little bit and really wanted to,
you know, hit it close and make sure it's perfect. And maybe that puts too much pressure on you. If you look at it as, oh, wow, I have 100 yards from my third into a par five, you get a little more excited. And it's just the way your mind kind of switches a little bit. And I think that's an important aspect of this week, just because you won't have a lot of opportunities and to take those in and do, again, just do literally do your best on every hole. I think one of the parts of the rough, though, that I wanted to talk about, and I, you know, I know you're going to the course today. Very interesting thing the USGA is doing that I really like. They actually have graduated rough, but only on the really long par fours, right, not on the shorter par fours and not on the par fives. So the par fives and the shorter par fours, the rough just starts immediately into the fairway. And it's really, really juicy. The other holes, you know, you have this little step cut that's a little shorter than the rough we normally play, but it's a lot more dense. So I think that it's actually played, we were talking about it yesterday, it's played a lot tougher than even like the long stuff at times, because it almost gives you that tease that you can hit it out. But at the same time, you do get some lies that are quite good in there. So I think it's been fair, because there's a, you know, 4-5, 4-90 par fours here. And again, you know, I understand that people don't think that's long anymore. It's still long, especially when you have to hit a shot that is so precise. You know, I've heard Bryson say he's just going to wail on it. And I'd love to see that this week, because I don't see that. And maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, I feel like over maybe 18 holes, you might get lucky with some lies. But for me, you know, we've played now, we're going to play 9 more holes today, but we've played about 36 holes in the last 4 days. And I haven't gotten enough good lies. You know, Joe and I have been playing this game with each other, stroke play game. And on the front nine, on the back nine, our first time playing, I was going around, well, I was one over on 17, and I got a lie that looked pretty juicy. And, you know, I hadn't been on the course yet, so granted, I didn't know I couldn't be where I ended up leaving it, but I hacked it out, and it you know, it was like this, you know, hard hack. I mean, I hit as far as I could, and it was just short left, and it goes in the rough where I have 1 foot in the bunker, 1 foot out. And now I'm on the left side of the green, and the left side is where the green actually runs away from left to right. So you can't be left even if you had a good lie. And now I have this screwy kind of stance. And then I tried to, that lie looked okay though. My stance was weird. The next shot goes like 15, you know, yards left of where I you know, wanted it to. Now I'm in the rough again. Then I stubbed that one. I end up making the triple. And so to your first question of the podcast of what makes this play so hard, that makes it hard. Now, if I had played that place before, I would never have hit the second shot where I did. So, you know, it was kind of a screwy triple. But the point is that I was out of position with a lie that didn't look that bad. And it feels like in 30 seconds, you've hit three shots and none of them have even been remotely decent. But it's not like you looked at anything too different. So it just starts to play so demanding. And that's where the mental will kick in, and you need to either not only avoid those, obviously, but if that happens, you have to understand that you could play some good golf and get it back, because I think people are going to make doubles out here this week, and it's who makes the least and who reacts to them the best. But man, it is it's just a golf course that's hard from tee to green. It's long, and it requires a ton of precision. It requires you to work your golf ball a little bit, and it requires you to chip and putt really well, and it requires you to think. I think that's the most important part.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. What's your strategy off the tee? Because you mentioned Bryson. I was watching a press conference this morning. You know, he's all over the place, by the way.
Yeah.
he said he could hit it long drive distances if he wanted to, the 48-inch driver. But yeah, I mean, I've now heard from about 5-10 different players of those top players in their press conferences and interviews and stuff. And it seems like everybody's kind of got a different philosophy. I mean, you were talking fairways being the most important part. So what's y'all's strategy? I mean, are you going to hit 5 drivers? Are you going to hit 10 drivers? I mean, it's long as well, as you mentioned, with some of these par fours.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the wind direction. This course does play a lot of right to left tee, not a lot, but it plays a good amount of right to left tee shots, especially on some of the shorter holes that maybe you would cut over the bunker. I don't draw my driver very well, so I like to play a cut, and there are trees off the tee, so you are kind of forced to make it turn. So I've been playing a lot of those holes more or less to hit the fairway. I personally, if I had a theory, I'm not sure if I've come up with one yet, but if I had a theory, I would play for fairway first. I'm hitting my irons really, really well. I've hit a lot of long irons this week, very close or close-ish. And I want to keep doing that. I think playing from the fairway is easier. Now, I don't hit it as obviously as far as Bryson or as far as Cameron Champ or any of these guys. So I don't know what it would be like to have. I don't really think you'd have wedges into some, maybe some of the par fours. There's a few that are 410, 420, but the 490 holes, I mean, if you miss the fairway far enough off, even if you had an 8-iron, I think it's going to be quite hard to get it. Again, it's more about where you're leaving it. It's less about getting it near the green. Like, you can get it near the green maybe, but if you're on the left and you needed to be right, it was kind of pointless. So I think my theory would be more to hit the fairways and take the free ones when you get them. You know, just more so in that fashion. But again, I mean, I don't know. It's so difficult to say because I haven't seen everyone else play it. But yesterday I felt like in our group, if you were in the fairway, you already felt like, you know, we're joking, if we were playing Wolf, you're just taking the first guy that hits the fairway just because you have such a better advantage to like actually hit the green. And the rough's thick, sure. But like I said, it's more where you can't go and you need to know where that ball is not going to travel to. And yeah, I don't know. I saw Cameron Champ on 612 is going to play as one of the funniest par fives ever because fairway 17 yards wide on the left. And then there's a bisecting kicker to the right and the ball literally just sprints off to the right into the rough. Even if you hit the right side of the fairway, it's a ridiculously hard tee shot and it's 633 yards. So when you lay up the first day, I laid up and I have 5-iron in for my third. And now you're talking about this green, right? You're now hitting a 5-iron into. So, like that hole's going to be silly, but I saw Cameron Champ while I was on 18, he was on that hole and he was so far up there. Holy cow. He got like 340 off the tee because it was right even with the bunker. That's I think about 340, but he's in the left rough and he hacked it just where I did. I mean, we're in the same spot. Now his hack out was probably a little easier than mine because he, you know, didn't need to advance it quite as far, but
still a hack out.
I don't know, man. Maybe I haven't seen Bryson play. I haven't seen Cameron play. I haven't seen Tony play. I haven't seen the longest guys play, but I have to think that the fairway, again, I know the percentage is going to be low, but I have to think that to make birdies and to avoid doubles, you just have to be in the fairway off that tee. Just
no matter what you leave yourself in is what you're saying.
I mean, because I could always, I could control where I'm leaving even a 4-iron,
right,
more so than I could some of these like 6 and 7 irons out of the rough. So, I mean, you're still trying to send it up there. I mean, I'm not saying I'm like laying off my driver, but I'm just like on certain holes we play 16 is 498 or something. Hubbard said it feels like you're at like a it's like a you're shopping and they're trying to like trick you into thinking it's $4 by saying it's like $4.98, right. $4.99 when it's like, why don't you just make the thing 500 and we could all, you know, be even. But on that hole it's like $4.98 and you know, I've hit three with the last few days because where it starts to turn left, it just like it runs through that corner and you can't be over there. I mean, It's a demanding golf course. But like I said, I mean, it's going to favor more of the scrambling person overall. I do think you need to have some length, though. I think that might be the one thing you would really help because you need some speed to get that thing out of the rough. You know, if Kisner was saying it yesterday, when he misses the fairway on certain holes, he has a 5-wood or whatever in or 4-iron. And when I miss the fairway, I have closer to a 6-iron. And it is a small difference, but it does help a little bit. So I think that's going to be a bit of a factor.
A buddy of mine brought up a point, Charlie. He was texting us a couple of days ago, and he said, why is it that every year when the U.S. Open rolls around, we all, for whatever reason, get like Men in Black, you know, zapped, and we forget the rough is thick at U.S. Opens and we all freak out for 3 days. I'm not sure I remember. Now, Erin Hills was bad because, you know, they had, not only did they have the huge rough, but then they cut it and they had the Kevin Na video and all that stuff. But I was laughing at it because it's so true. You know, we 11 months passes and we all completely forget that the U.S. Open is going to have thick rough. And then for 3 days, I wanted to make a viral video, even though I have absolutely no idea how to edit videos and I don't have TikTok. I wanted to have a video where I just kept dropping like larger items and eventually just drop like your golf bag in the rough and make it just TikTok disappear. But, you know, I mean, it does seem like that's been such a storyline. And when you kind of read into people that really know Wingfoot well, the experts that know it, all they talk about is the greens. And it's kind of what you've spoken on, even hitting a fairway. It's like, you can take on a flag if you want to, But if you don't pull off the golf shot and you're on the wrong, you're at the wrong spot. I mean, three putts, very, very likely. It's not possible. It's almost likely on these greens, right?
Yeah, we haven't practiced much 50-foot lag putting because I just don't. You can't really replicate a lot of the 50 footers you're going to have. You know, I've seen 10 putts this week putt off the green when we don't know exactly where a pin's going to be. You think one could be there and you just watch the ball roll off the green. So it's kind of silly. I mean, honestly, I think I read this morning, Tiger said it's like playing Augusta with rough. So they're crazy. And what's weird is the fronts of all greens when you're watching, just notice the fronts of every green starts off very, very benign, almost no slope. Typically a false front, but almost no slope. And as you get to the middle and the backs of the greens, you start to see a ton of slope, a ton of character. And that's where, you know, obviously we'll get more demanding. So when you see front pins this week on the telecast, I think that's where you might see some 20 footers hold, you know, some good putts, you know, maybe some better golf shots as far as results go. When you get to the back of the greens, you're going to see some funky stuff. People playing it off hills, people using backstops to kind of bring the ball back down. You're going to see balls get really, really close to those pins because it'll funnel, but you need to be in that funnel or else, you know, there's certain pins we've been joking about. I'm not sure, you know, we don't know where the pins will be, but we're not sure how you could even have them in certain spots. So I think that's interesting. To your rough question, I think it's because, so I think the USGA does something to the rough, like with some sort of chemical to make it like thicker and like more dense, because this is like, we've played longer or similar length rough than this. I hate when people show like how long the rough is. The rough at Olympia Fields was super long, but it was very wispy. You could hit almost anything you wanted out of that rough.
This is like
I said, the first cut or the step cut, the graduated step cut is so dense. Like if your ball's in the middle of it, you can't really move it either. So this stuff just doesn't have a lot of room for you to get a club onto it. I think the longest club we've been able to hit out of this has been, out of the real rough has been at 7-iron, and it probably went about 160, 170 yards. So it got out there with some run. I mean, I know we were thinking about putting a hybrid in this week just for that, because Kiz was hitting like a 5-wood out of there that looked pretty good. But I just don't know if it's, you know, worth changing the bag, because I don't know how close you can hit that 5-wood. I mean, it's not like it's going to change your life.
You need
so
like a 9-wood or something.
And Louis played a 9-1 at the PGA and it came out amazing. So the 9-wood actually might do
9
something.
9 or 11-wood. You got to go throw back.
Some part of me
days.
Says you don't want to get baited into thinking you can hit a great shot.
Okay.
You almost want it to be like, that lie sucks. Well, cool. I'm chipping it out, because I had it happen again on, like I said, 17. I had it happen yesterday on a hole where I'm like, yeah, I could do this. And it just, I'm like, what? That doesn't look like a golf shot. And it's just, it's so it's different. So I think we talk about it for a good reason. But I also think we talk about it because it's like this week will be silly, because I played Marion. If you hit in the rough at Marion, you were in as bad a spot as this. This is just as bad, but that was so short that you could get a lot of shots to the green. Here, if you have a bad enough lie, you might be chipping out and then hitting a 6-iron in for your third
on a par four.
I mean, and then if, like I said, you expect so much yourself from the fairway that if you miss the fairway, or I'm sorry, that if you hit the fairway and miss the green, it feels like the world's crashing down. When you have to think about yourself to yourself, that was just a 4-iron I hit. Like we don't typically
like I
do
miss
that.
Greens with 4-irons.
Yeah,
occasionally.
And I think maybe part because the PGA Tour, we don't have clubs like that in. We don't have rough like that. Obviously, they don't like to grow the rough up. So this just feels so backwards to us, to everybody. And I think it's good, though, because this is what we expect. I think this will be the fairest test. That's what I said about Marion. This will be very, very fair. It'll be goofy. I'm sure you'll get people complaining. I've heard the pins won't be crazy, but there's just nowhere to leave pins out here that's not crazy. We played the pins in the middle of the greens. It's been nuts. So whoever wins this week has done is the best. There's no fitting. There's no perfect person. People, you know, I feel like are trying to say that or ask that like Rory would be the best, right? Because there's a lot of dogleg lefts. It's like, sure, but if he
if it don't draw,
misses,
he's chipping out too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like at some point, there's also holes that don't draw, and it's not like you just I mean, he hits it really, really straight, but I mean, you still got to do. Even if you hit that fairway, you need to do so much well from there. So it's like, do I think that driving is super important? Yeah, I think driving and chipping, but I don't, it just doesn't fit one per, it just fits the best player, whoever's the best player is.
So I was going to ask you this later, but you're segueing me into it now. I feel like golf coverage from everybody, myself included, has become early week, especially of majors, it's all about who could win.
Yeah. I never understood that.
It's so silly. I mean, first of all, what are the likelihood you get it right? And second of all, what happens if you do? I mean, I had Keegan Bradley to win the 2011 PGA Championship. It's not sick. Like I didn't get an award.
Yeah, you know? But I mean, that's
sick. It was a long shot. I had Danny Willett as my.
What made you call Keegan?
I just was looking at the sheet one day and said, I kind of like Keegan here.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, cool. It's complete luck, right? Yeah, I mean, cool. It's a complete shot in the dark. But I mean, I was on radio doing the Masters when Danny Willett won, and they were asking me for long shots. Willett was like 10th in the world. And
yeah. I like Danny Willett. That was a good one. Shot. I remember that one.
And I mean, he wins there. But I've also had 50 majors where the guy missed the cut that I picked to win. Yeah. So it's, I don't get why we're obsessed with this idea of picking the player. Now, I almost feel like if we spent our pre-tournament time just focusing on a group of people, to your point, like, are the Bombers favored here?
Yeah,
maybe not. Maybe it's not a Bomber golf course. Maybe it's an Accuracy golf course. I feel like that would make a lot more sense, because at least maybe you have 15 or 20 players that fit in that collective group.
Yeah.
But to sit here and try to pick one player to win at Wingfoot, like you said, anybody can make an 8 or a 9 on a hole, and all of a sudden now it's battling uphill. And by the way, there's not a lot of birdie holes. We've talked a lot about the toughness of Wingfoot. I want you now, this is our mental game we're going to play. I want you to speak positively about the week, the golf course, your excitement. Let's have a couple of minutes of positivity.
Yeah, well, I first off, this course favors me in general, because I do drive it okay, and I am a very good long iron player.
I agree.
That's what I do. So, you know, I played, I know these are small samples, but I played, you know, we play 2 and 3 yesterday, and it's into the fan, and I had a 4 iron to 30 feet on 2. That was, you know, me and Kiz had hit the green. And then on 3, I hit a 3 iron to like 12 feet. And it's just, no one hits their long irons well enough to beat a golf course, but it is important, I think, to feel comfortable hitting a long iron. And I do. So I think that's a big thing for me. I think, again, I went on vacation last week, and I had some people, you know, in my mentions on Twitter, rightfully so, say, oh, well, you know, I'm glad you're on vacation, but I'm fading you for the US Open. And I didn't respond, but I wanted to say, because this was my true thought on it, I needed a mind reset more than I needed a physical reset. My golf game has been fine. My just like excitement to play has been low. So I feel like I am the most refreshed person here. I also am experienced. I think the first time I played the US Open, it was a lot like I met a really cool kid the other day who, you know, came up and did the thing like, oh, I just want to introduce myself. And I love that stuff, because I used to do that too. I think it's so cool. But part of that is like, I don't have to do that anymore. Like, you know, right. I have played with some absolute all-stars yesterday. I'm playing with some today. We're like friendlier now. You know, I'm not, you know.
Who are you playing with today?
JT, DJ, and Bubba. I've never played with Bubba, so nice. That'll be cool. But, you know, DJ, like, I've become kind of friendly with him. His caddy's like our favorite, AJ. Like, we stand and hang out with him and talk or whatever. You're friends with the guys who play great golf.
And you're so not the outlier. Gawking. You're a peer.
Yeah, you're not gawking at it anymore. And I think that's important. So it's exciting to see where, I guess, you know, not that it's come full circle fully, but like come half circle. Like I've gone from an inexperienced, holy cow, I've never seen anything before, to showing up with a plan to get prepared for a major championship. I think that that's where I am excited about the week. I think there are some scoring opportunities on this golf course. I think that our game plan and where Joe and I have thought through this place is really good. Now, executing is going to be one thing, but I think finally I'm out of execution and thinking that I'm not going to execute that great all the time, because the course doesn't let you. So I think that this week I will be the, you know, most, I will have probably the most fun and understanding of what we need to do. And I think that's the positivity of this place. And I've played well. I played really well yesterday. So, you know, the game feels like it's just slowly getting there. And I feel like my mind is helping that happen, because I feel like we're just in a good spot. I mean, what do you can't, to the same point as you just mentioned, which I love that you said this, that how are you just going to pick somebody to win? You can't just go out there and win. Like, right. I can't just decide I'm going to win. So
I think I'm going to
put
my, week.
Especially on a place like this, I'm going to put myself in the best positions over 4 days. And I think that's the important part, is realizing that this shot right here on the 7th hole on Thursday could very well affect Sunday. So let's make the most of this one and not, you know, not be a hero maybe or whatever. And let's add this thing up after 72 and see what happens. Because I was telling Joe yesterday, I think even would be a phenomenal round. I could see somebody shooting 65 if they just really striped it off the tee and or striped it all over the place, because you could get it in the bowls. I don't, if even as a great round to me, that's one, like one great round. You don't see, you know how the saying, you don't see a lot of great rounds backed up by another round. 1-2 under is now a great round. So you're now saying that 2 over would be like a typical round. So you have to think that over 4 days, even if you shot, you know, a few over one day or, you know, 5 over, even if you shot even 1 under, 2 under, you race up the board. And I think that's exciting. That's where I've been trying to get my head, my head in, like in that headspace where I'm not so focused on, the right this moment. I'm focused on the macro and being like, yeah, this moment's important because it plays into the 72 holes of this.
Do you, when the Lakers play on the East Coast, are you just going to not watch it?
It's impossible, man. I
tried to watch the game last night.
I don't know how people live out here.
I remember when I moved to Connecticut for Back 9 Network, we were waiting for the, no big deal, we had movers, and we were waiting for them to bring our stuff. So we were laying on like an air mattress with my laptop connected to the Wi-Fi. And I was watching a U of A game and it went to overtime, football game. And I woke up and they like kicked the field goal to win the game. It was 2:45.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what is going on?
How do you couldn't watch a Hawaii football game? What I get so
just
frustrated
with. Just more you have to do with your coffee.
Yeah, I'm not. You set an alarm to wake up early for it. I'm not sure who won the Heisman this year, so forgive me, because I'm sure he deserved it too. But when Christian McCaffrey didn't win the Heisman as he went to Stanford, the year that he had like his all-purpose yards was stupid, and now we're seeing how good he is. It really proved the point that like there is a bias from the Pac-12 just because people don't get to watch. You don't get the excitement of watching a Lamar Jackson sprint around and everyone is watching that game. Most people are either too drunk or too tired by the time that Christian McCaffrey has, you know, ran back his second touchdown of 90 yards, you know, off the kickoff, and then also lined up at running back and dominated that too. So
he's getting like 350 all-purpose yards every game.
It was every week.
It was Joe Burrow this year, which was, I'd say Joe Burrow was an appropriate
this year. I'm just saying
that year
pointed out to me that there is a bias because people don't watch, or again, they've had too many drinks to really notice what's going on, because he deserved a lot more hype and he didn't get it. And it's not that I don't care that he didn't get it. He went to Stanford. What do I care? But it just proved like, okay, now when I argue with people that, you know, Cal is better than, I don't know, some D2 school, like, and they think the D2 school is better than us. I can be like, okay, you just don't watch, you know, and, which is fine.
Which makes sense.
Of course,
I wouldn't watch it. That's what I was saying. When I lived in Tucson, I had absolutely no understanding. Why is there an East Coast bias? Yeah. You come out here and you get old. You're not old yet, but we're a month away.
2 months.
Sorry. Well, I mean, we're a month don't and cut a half. Me. It's, don't we're cut we're me well out. Into September. We're past the 15th. Before we get to a couple of things, including our flights, the last thing, I heard Andy Johnson and Brennan talking on Shotgun Start about this, and I wanted to hear from you since, you know, you played the golf course a few times already. The difference in starting on 1 and 10, you know, because 10 is famously one of the better par threes in the country, but it's not exactly a friendly start, especially if you have a morning tee time off 10, right?
Yeah.
One also not super easy, yeah, one, in case people are wondering.
Everything depends on the wind direction, as I've noticed, as far as the how the rounds will go. North wind, 1, 2, 3, 4 play into. Then you play a long hole down, short hole into, and then down the rest. So 7, 8, 9. That would mean that the back nine would be off the right on 10, which I think isn't too hard. It kind of shapes the hole a little bit. 11 would be into, but it's a short par 4. And I would say 11 might be one of the only easy relative to making par holes as par fours go.
Par hole.
And then 12, which I said it will be the goofiest hole, will be into the wind. However, that fairway is going to be hard to hit regardless. So
and it's
I
a three
think
shot
that
or
if
anyway,
it's a
right?
north wind, yeah, it's, yeah.
It, I mean, there's it's three shot. Is anybody going to get there?
Yeah, I could see. I if mean, it's downwind, where I maybe? Saw Cameron hit his drive yesterday, he could have got there. But like Ricky had a fairway and a really good three would have probably had 40 yards. So I could see somebody getting there. Okay. But it's going to take two amazing shots. You have to hit it like up and around or over the tree, which I know I've seen Bryson do, so I'm sure someone will, but you need the fairway is 17 yards wide where you're landing it. So I think that if you were coming off of a north wind start and you're starting on the back, I would say that you would ease your way into the round a little bit better. Personally, could be guessed, but I think 10 would play the easiest it could play. 11 is a hole that you could play into the wind and still make a birdie or a par. And 12 is going to be hard regardless of down or into. So I would say the start. Whereas yesterday, 1, 2, 3 were a nightmare. And 4, one, you know, one we missed fairway, but one we would have hit a 5 or 6 iron into. Now it was early, so I could be off 2, 4 iron, 3, 3 iron. That was from an up tee. So 4 was 6 iron. So I think that that plays a big part. So I would say in general, I would actually say starting on the back would probably be easier to get your to get your kind of rhythm going, because you are given a fairway on 10. You can tee it up in on the short grass. I think that's big.
Yeah.
And
you
I think
the fairway on 10.
One, you miss that fairway and it, all of a sudden you're like, welcome to the US Open really quick. And 11, you can miss that fairway and still get it up near the green. 12, again, you can miss that fairway and pitch it out and still get it up by the green. And 3, I think that that as far as starting their championship off, I don't think that, I think if I'm splitting hairs, 10 would probably be an easier start, where one, you are hitting, you know, driver 3 would off 1, driver 3 would off, or driver off 2, 3, you're going to have a long iron, and then 4, you're probably going to hit, you know, depending on the wind, but you could hit 3 iron all the way through with, or driver. So I would say as far as warming your way into US Open, I'd rather probably start in the back, but I don't, again, it's going to, you could hit a bad shot on 10 and feel the same wrath, but right. I do think it's nice to hit a shot from the fairway on the first day.
And on a peg. Yeah. Hey, where do you wear your US Open pin? Do you wear it on your hat, shirt? Belt.
Yeah. Hat's a little heavy.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering.
Yeah.
Belt's kind of the professional preferred way to do it.
Yeah, I've seen everyone with the belt.
I have a game for you. It's called More Likely, Less Likely.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. More Likely, Less Likely. You gotta pick one or the other. a player finishes under par like Tiger did at Pebble in 2000, where he blows the field away and he's the only player under par and wins by 8 or 10. Or 3 players finish under par. Which one's more likely?
That's a really good one. I'll go 3 players.
Okay.
Field's deep. I could see that. I don't see 12 under par.
I think, well, like I mean, even just, you know, my thought was even somebody finishing like 6 or 7 and then the next best score being plus 2.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, that would be, I just don't see anybody going that much under par. And as far as like best golfers in the world, I don't see next best being near like 8 over, because okay. People will figure out a way to get around even par out here. I don't care. You could be struggling. Yesterday, you know, we had moments where you would think people were struggling. Then you look back and, you know, there were only 1 or 2 over through a few holes. So it's like you could figure your way around it. But I think shooting 6 under is, that would be wild.
Well, so.
So I'm going 3 people under par, maybe.
Media guy. Perfect. Perfect. Right into it. More likely, we see a sub 65 round all week. Or somebody shoots a number that starts with a 9 in the 90s.
I don't think you'll see anything in the 90s.
The over-under for the highest score is like 87.5, I think.
It's now, 20 over par.
I'm not arguing yeah. with you. I just think if you do have some past champions in the field that if you get off to like, you start 7-6, you know, it's going to be a battle.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
Okay, so you say sub 65.
I think sub 65 would be more likely, but I would say that question would be perfect if it was 63 or better.
Okay.
90s, 20 overs. That would be crazy, because this is a great field.
There's not the qualifiers.
That would be shocking.
You hit a 5, you've already touched on this a little bit, but you hit a 5 iron or more, so 4 iron, 3 iron, out of the primary rough, versus you do not hit a 5 iron throughout the entire week out of the rough.
I doubt I'll hit a 5 iron out of the rough. I guess if I'm in that first graduated cut rough, I've hit a 6 iron this week. But I don't think I've even attempted anything longer than 7 from the longest stuff. So super unlikely. I would say that I hit a longer club than that.
And the champion is in the top 15 in driving distance versus in the bottom 15 in driving distance.
Top 15. But again, I think that it slightly favors a bomber more for speed, less for you need to be way up there.
Got speed out, like speed out of the rough, speed out of the rough, second shots,
yeah.
and stuff.
But yeah, I mean, it helps if you miss. Of course, if you're further up, this is the no-brainer of why, you know, people don't love the long rough stuff in the narrow fairways is, you know, it would obviously be easier to have a 6 iron or be, I'm not even gonna say numbers or clubs anymore. It's easier to be 170 from the rough than 200. So if you're 200, it's obviously going to be harder. So I don't think it's a prerequisite, but of course I think it helps. And I just don't, you're to be a bottom 15 this week, distance and
win, I think it would take some incredibly special golf, like very, very, very special.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Before we get to flights, I just wanted to say this real quick. I played golf with Nick Faldo this week. No big deal.
Which green jacket did he wear?
Yeah, the second one. We have the same agent, so that's why we play together. Not like he asked me to play golf. Shout out to Jeremy. But had a 5 or 6 hole stretch. I'm bringing this up only because of this. I feel like these sports announcers, the ex-athletes, if you will, that get into the booth, I do this as well. You look at them after a certain amount of time as an announcer.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Collinsworth, who, I mean, and Collinsworth wasn't Nick Faldo, but you look at some of these guys in the booth and you almost forget that they were this unbelievably talented elite athlete. And, you know, Faldo's been in the booth for like 18 years, right? Doing this. He had a 5 or 6 hole stretch, Max, where it was like 4 iron dart, wedge kick in, mid iron dart, you know, to like 12 feet makes it. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is the number one player in the world. You kind of forget it sometimes. You always see him in the CBS jacket now.
Yeah.
Sometimes forget that he kind of knows how to do the golf thing.
Guy's pretty good at this. Yeah.
So it was cool to see him kind of zoning for a little bit and
that's
remind
awesome.
Myself that, you know, Nick Faldo was, again, he was not bad.
Golfer first.
He was a golfer first. All right, let's get to flights. You have some flights. You have did you say you have a lot of best things?
I have 3 best things and 1 worst thing.
Let's go.
They could all also probably be worst things.
I mean, that's the point of this game.
I only have 2 best things. The worst, I'll say the worst thing first. Well, we first got here to Wingfoot Sunday. Showed up Saturday, flew in Saturday, got out there Sunday to play 9 holes, practice a bit. I had traveled, so I had my bag as light as I could to avoid fees. And I had 3 golf balls in my bag. So I walked out, I said, Joe, we're only playing 9 today. I only have 3 balls in there, just FYI. So don't like be throwing them around. And he goes, oh no. I was like, what? He goes, oh man, Butchie is Gary Woodland's cut. He goes, Butchie just told me they went out and on 6, the drivable hole on the left. He's like, I threw him 3 balls to chip with and we lost one of them.
When he threw him into chip.
He's like leaving him out there for him to go chip and they lost one of them. So that was the worst thing I heard.
This is such a relatable moment.
Relatable.
For a number of reasons. I love the fact that you didn't have a lot of stuff in your bag as you travel.
Yeah, I know.
Pro golfers, man.
To be heavy. Best thing I heard.
Real quick, what's your golf bag travel case and everything when you put it on the scale? What are you saying? PJ Tour player, bag, all your crap. What are you typically weighing in at?
I've noticed if I have no golf shoes in there, no putting arc, and no, I travel with the extra driver, but no extra anything else, it'll be like right on 49 and a half.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what you have the small bag, so I imagine getting to 50 is very difficult.
If I go on a golf trip to somewhere that it might rain, I mean, I got to have a lot of rain gear.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That's pretty heavy.
But, you know, I mean, I'm also no big deal. I have executive platinum status, so I get 75 on American. So, I mean, if you ever need me to throw a driver in my bag, just let me know.
I will say that even just carrying it, though, around, wheeling it around lighter is better. Like, I would rather light than not light. Even if you're allowed to have it up to 70 or whatever they allow you, like, it's still better to wheel that stupid thing.
Dragging... So,
and picking up and putting the car is not fun.
I don't mind traveling with golf clubs. I feel like people complain about traveling with their clubs. You know, I mean, places like Ship Sticks and stuff are a big business because of this, right? You want to just ship your golf clubs there. The only time I hate it is if you have to get in the rental car shuttle. That's the only time.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
You know, I flew into JFK and it's got the tram. I mean, I'm all good. But when you have to get on the bus with your clubs and a big bag or a medium-sized bag, you feel like the biggest asshole in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's another, you're with a human with wheels, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
It's another human with wheels on it.
Yeah, you do the thing too where you have to load one up, go back and get the one, and I'm always scared that the guy's going to leave me and my clubs are just going to go away and I'm just going to sit
like
there. Yeah, this is my nightmare.
Best thing?
Speaking of Keegan Bradley, his caddy.
We weren't speaking. We spoke of him 45 minutes ago.
Yeah,
okay, perfect. I like that. Always in the back of your head.
Yeah. I don't know if he had played here or if he'd been out here longer, but my, you know, Joe had went up to him as he was walking by and he goes, hey, you know, did you figure out the course? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, you know, I think he either said you played, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but you played here or you guys were out there early or whatever. And Joe's like, did you figure out the course when you're out there? And he goes, oh yeah, I figured out the course. He goes, oh, Joe's like, what's the secret? He goes, yeah, don't play here.
Really?
It's just too hard. Like, what are you going to figure out? Like, yeah, hey, hit it right there. And then hit it right there. And then don't three putt all the time. Like that's like, it's so, Joe always does this stupid joke. And it's so funny because whenever you have a new person, I can always make, you know, the same, you know, complaining joke. But he always says, you know, what, I'll be like, where do you like it here? And he'll be like, in the short grass, you know. And I'm just like, I hate you because you know that you don't have to hit this drive and it looks so demanding. So that was just kind of like a perfect, yeah, this is just.
Yeah, just don't play here. Yeah. Well, you know that, I believe this is true. If you win a U.S. Open, you get this honorary membership to the golf course. And I heard that Ernie, when he won at Oakmont in 94, got the honorary Oakmont membership. And he only went one time ever again. And it was because he had a whole bunch of buddies that wanted to make a trip and play. He's like, I don't want to go back here.
I'm good. Golf course.
Would you, if you had to play Wingfoot every day, would you love it or would it be?
Yeah,
you
I would love it because it's just this rough is too much.
So it
I
know was a we regular keep talking size about
it. Rough. Yeah, but it would be fun because you could play, the short game shots are so fun. You play a lot of shots around, you know, uphills and downhills. You're going to have like the thing where the fans like, oh, he looks dead. And you're going to see a shot go really close. And like, oh, you know, they want to see carnage. And they're like, oh, like that's not fun. But there, it's the opposite of, there are runoffs, but I would say that there's a lot of bowls, like little bowls, but the ball has to be perfect. So I hope people appreciate how good those shots are. Even the bunker shots. I hit one yesterday and Joe was like, hey, if you play this left line and it goes too far, like we're going to have 40 feet up and over a ridge. And we're obviously just a practice round, but I hit this really good bunker shot, like in, you know, little, like, you know, one step gap and it hit and went down to 3 feet and made the easy par. But I played it 18 feet left. Now it's still demanding because if you miss, you're screwed. But I think that would be really fun. It's just we keep talking, of course, and you even mentioned it, like the rough. Everyone's talking too much about the rough, but that's why this isn't fun.
Right.
Like, it, and fun relative to, I'm doing this for my life. It might be fun if we were just, you know, goofing around and all of us went out to play. But I like the greens are super cool. It's wild. Like I said, if you put a pin in the front middle of the green, it's really nothing. And then you put it 20 feet back and left and it's all of a sudden you're like, what? Like, I feel like I'm at Magic Mountain, you know, amusement park all of a sudden. I have another, this was my favorite best thing I heard this week, by the way. So, you know, Kisner's caddy, Dwayne, or Dewey as he's known, is, you know, a lot of people's favorite. He's just always has something witty to say. He's with Kevin and, you know, Kevin's always saying something, you know, funny or whatever. And their tandem is cool. I think, you know, Kevin's always complaining and Dwayne's always rolling his eyes like, you're really good at this. Why are you complaining? So we were looking for a ball on 12 yesterday in the left. And we joked that I think Jordan found it. And he said it was his ball. And he's like, oh, right at 255, you know, because it's now 3 minutes is your maximum amount of time to look for a golf ball. And if you don't find it within that time, it's lost, even if you found it right after. So he, you know, made the joke or whatever, I guess. Dewey was talking to Joe and he goes, 3 minutes sure does feel like a short amount of time when you're looking for a golf ball, but it feels like a really long time when you're on a treadmill. And I was like, yeah, it really does. It's like the exact opposite. Because I feel like if I'm on a treadmill for 2 minutes, I'm like, I feel like I've been on this thing for 10. And golf is the exact opposite. You start looking and somebody yells, it's been 2 minutes. And you're like, what the hell? Where'd the time go?
What a lie.
Yeah, that's really good.
That might be the best thing we've ever heard in the history of the podcast.
I think he's probably said it a few
times. That's fine, though. I love it. Great line.
I really liked it. Did you have any flights? Did you have a...
I have a worst thing I heard this week was that Dustin Johnson doesn't remember if he played Wingfoot or not.
Did he really say that?
Yeah, he said in the press conference, like, I didn't remember.
This guy's unbelievable, man. He's just unbelievable.
It's winged foot. You know, I mean, I know pro golfers, for the most part, some know the history of everything, and then some are, you know, they go there and it's their job and they play and they get done and golf is golf. But it's winged foot. I mean, this isn't even, you know, I can understand if you didn't remember playing Erin Hills, you know, I mean, kind of a new golf course for U.S. Open, or Chambers Bay, a new golf course for U.S. Open. It's like, this is like kind of a famous place.
I could only imagine one golfer on the planet.
That's a good point. That's very fair.
I have a question for you since you're going to the golf course today that I'd like you to mull over.
Okay.
Because I have a hot take.
Let's go.
Transplant COVID to 2006 instead, or transplant 2006 to here. Ooh. Phil Mickelson wins the US Open. Of course, the butterfly effect, everything could be changed. That 18th hole, I think he makes it into the East Course fairway.
That's what, you know, my producer at Fox Forever, Mark Loomis, who's a member
of Wingfoot. Oh, I met him yesterday. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he always says that if there was no tent there, it would have been, he would have had basically a straight shot into the green, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the rough then would have been trampled. So maybe you, but I think even that, he would have had to lay up because you couldn't have hit the golf shot. Like you don't get that lie this week anymore. You can't, literally can't hit a 2-iron out of this thing.
By the way, so, I'm going to go over there and look.
Go look, because I'd be curious. Also, look how far left it is, because it is mind-boggling. You're going to drive that far left. Like, it is so far left.
I have a good idea for this.
Make a par.
Just trying to make pars this week for you. I think that some major, maybe be the US Open, should have, so the best tee times, you and I have talked about it before, the time blocks that are the best. I think they should have just a champions block. And Thursday, Friday, it's only past champions play together in this block. And that's who's paired together. You know, it might be the US Open, might be the Open Championship, might be the PGA. I mean, Masters could do it, I guess. There's not a whole bunch of people to pick from in terms of, you know, still active players that are in that lineup. But just have basically like three blocks, make them gold lettering if you want, do whatever you want. I know they have the trophies on the back of the bibs now with the players now at the US Opens that they started a couple of years ago. But I just like it. The champions block. Here's the three blocks, four blocks or whatever. And these are just guys that have won this championship
before. Yeah, that'd be cool. I think the USGA, to your point though, does, and I'm not like debating, that would also be awesome, but they do a pretty cool job thinking about it.
For sure.
About this stuff.
They do a great job here.
I think that's that. They are an interesting group, to say the least, but I feel like if you're part of their little crew, which I am, they really take care of you. It doesn't exempt them from some things I think that have been insane, but I do think that that's been, it's a cool little, they do their best to make sure that if you've won a USGA event or factored highly in one, you will be,
you're kind of in their part family, of the little crew. You know?
So I think that's nice. So yeah, to your point, I wouldn't, you know, I could see them doing something like that.
I don't know if you've gone over this in your head, but what's your pairing groupings theme? If you could come up with one quickly.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
Skinny guys, like 31 waist guys,
31 waist. We could have the white belt group. They should just pair people who mark their ball with a poker chip together, just so they can all feel the wrath really of funny. Having to look at it.
The Vegas group.
Because I don't really care about the white belt thing. I just think it's always funny that people get so mad. But the poker chip is actually, and I used to do it. It's very obnoxious. Everyone else.
Ashton and I just had a tournament this past weekend in Phoenix. And we played a two-man event at Los Cindis. You missed out on the practice round with us, which for good measure, and it was a good idea. But guy, first day, poker chip. I mean, just it always in your way.
Yeah, I never noticed it.
You've got to move it two times.
Yeah, it's always, and it's just something you're looking at. So that would be a good one. You could have the male pattern baldness group. You can just get funny with it. I will say I was with Kevin Statler, who's become a buddy of mine. And one of the first times I ever met him, we were talking about the themes because I think it was US Open week and we were all at a web event watching. And he was, I was talking about, wasn't there that year that they paired all like the overweight guys together? He goes, yeah, I was in that group. And I was like, I felt so bad, but he's like the best. He was laughing. He goes, God, I was so fat.
Well, if you remember, I think he was the one maybe in that because it was Brendan DeJong, I think, was in it. And there was somebody else. And I just remember that I think Stadler was like the one that didn't get mad.
Yeah.
He was like, it's fine.
Whatever. Yeah, he would laugh. But it's I don't know. That one's ridiculous. But the Ricky Fowler pairing is really cool. Hovland and Wolf.
Oklahoma State.
I think
they have an all ASU pairing this week.
We are close to an all Cal pairing, but I think that Colin should probably be playing with Tiger. I think it makes sense at this point. Someone said on Twitter, do you think Tiger's ever been the third best or the worst iron player in his group? Because he's playing with JT and Colin right now. And it's probably pretty close. Now, it might make Tiger flex on everybody and start just hooking the ball 35 yards to 8 feet, but you never know. I mean, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Before we go, I'm still on my no social media thing. Just want to let
Proud
you know,
you.
Way happier.
Yeah.
Like in every aspect, I'm pretty happy and positive. But I did sign on Twitter yesterday to just see if you'd said anything or anything to bring up on the podcast. And I went to my mentions on my desktop. Again, I don't have it on my phone. like third message down, somebody mentioned this was the worst golf podcast in the world. And I was like,
Oh, nice.
This is why I don't.
We won something.
That's what I said. Your first or last. Send a trophy. I mean, Bobby told the Ricky Bobby.
Send a
told
trophy,
us that.
Bitch.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, if we're dead, if we're DFL, that's okay with us.
Yeah, it's all good.
That was like literally the third thing on Twitter. I went, why do I do this? Why do we do this?
Yeah.
Why have I spent days of my life on this stupid ass thing? But I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. I mean, Wednesday, you got a lot of stuff going on. Big pairing today. That's kind of fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah. I mean, yesterday was, you know, I play with my favorite golfer of all time.
Well, so I know. How was it with Speed?
It was great. I love him. Yeah. Also, wanted to point out a friend of the podcast, Aaron Rodgers. What a start to the
big start.
To the year.
Big victory. Really,
I've had a great sports week.
Yeah, week. I was going to say all your teams have won.
I'm starting to get a little nervous.
Not play and just get a W. Who knows? If Bubba, by chance, when you play with him today, if the yellow ball is easier to find, I got a couple sleeves in my 100%. Bag at the hotel, so just let me know. But they're X's. I know you don't play the X.
No, but yeah, I can switch it. If it's findable, it might actually be more
Joe
important.
Would say if you have the first tee tomorrow, you pulled out
We already talked about it. He said that, you know, if he had to tell his friends to do anything nowadays, because he tried his first yellow ball last week, he said it's awesome for like the average golfer who just like wants to play and have fun, because he's just so much easier to tell where your ball is on the green, if your ball is one on the green, if it's not. I don't think that he would take too kindly to me switching to it tomorrow, but you know, that's besides the point. I am technically the boss. I can do whatever the hell
I want. That's right. I guess technically that's true. That's like, reminds me of when you caddied for me in that amateur qualifier and we were so bummed the first that first round, the guy had a yellow golf ball in our group. Like, come on, man, this was the only thing we were here
supposed
for.
To be the easiest
this is
day
the,
of
we're,
my
we
life
we
didn't
know where
sudden,
our ball
yeah.
was Well, have a great week. I'm excited to see it. You will not be able to hear my broadcast at all if you're in the United States. So sorry about that. But Dan Hicks is lovely, as always. So that'll be fun. But glad to be here. Excited to go see the golf course. I messed up. I had the got in Monday.
Yeah, welcome.
COVID
welcome
test.
To 2020
didn't realize
COVID
that meant
rules.
I couldn't go to the course on Tuesday. So I'm going to do a lot of homework today. But I hope you guys enjoy it. Leave a review, if you will. I think on Friday we might have merchandise on that up on Imperial. So if that's the case, we'll obviously send that out on social media. Anything else? Last parting words, Max?
No, just to leave you with this. Obviously, wash your hands. Enjoy the carnage this week. I think it'll be really good entertainment. And Taylor Swift still has more banners at Staples Center than the Clippers. So have a good one, guys.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.